Okay, it's great to be back with you with another Gold Nugget segment. Today's special guest, David Morgan, the Silver Investor. Precious metals investors endured a difficult market last year, to say the least. According to one analyst, though, over the last 13 years, no single government currency has outperformed gold and silver. Returning to the broadcast with his outlook for the new year, it's a pleasure to welcome back to the show the Silver Investor, David Morgan, publisher of the Morgan Report at silver-investor.com. David, how are you doing today?
Chris, I'm doing quite well.
You've actually said for years that this economic Titanic continues to slowly take on water. Eventually, a rogue wave could send this vessel to Davy Jones' locker. Could you outline how silver could maybe be the life preserver for many of our listeners today?
Certainly. Couple things. One is, it's a fact that every time that there has been a fiat money system, or a lot of people even say that a gold system is fiat, but a system that is an unbacked, unsound monetary system, it's failed. So we have a 100% track record, and you know that fact, and you ask yourself a simple question: what would prevent the U.S. dollar from going the same way as all these other times it's been tried? And you have a very good answer, then I'm willing to hear it. So it's on the road to destruction. Even if you use the government's own numbers, the Federal Reserve's own numbers, the 1913 dollar, when the Federal Reserve took over the monetary system, what you'll have is a dollar that's worth roughly 3 cents. So it's lost 97% of its value in approximately 100 years. You know, so that's fact number one. Fact number two is that there has never been any time when it has been a non-gold-backed currency and you had a currency crisis that they haven't gone the method of inflation. So the deflationists say, well, you know, you're having deflation, and certainly can argue both sides. I can make both arguments. I'm pretty skilled at making the deflation argument or the inflation argument. But I want to work with facts, and the facts are that any time you had a non-backed currency and it's been destroyed, it's been through an inflationary process, not a deflationary process. And that makes sense to me, because if you look at gold being, you know, used as money for thousands of years on and off, you know, sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. And certainly there's been other methods of making transfers. I understand that. But overall, the public has voted at large that gold is very sound money, silver as well, most of the time. If you go back and look at that, then the dollar is basically doomed. And the way it's going to be doomed is that the path that it's been on for so long is going to continue. And the big question is, when does it accelerate? When do people give up? When the dollar's worth, you know, 2 cents of the 1913 dollar, 1 cent, 1/2 cent, and how does it get there? But the main thing is that gold has survived for thousands of years at some value, and paper money never has. So it's really that succinct. Paper money always fails. And if it always fails, will the dollar fail? Well, I think you can use some logic and determine it probably will. The big question, of course, is when, how, you know, when, really. And how is also an important question. In every other case where we're not backed by anything, it's been through an inflationary process.
So let's also address, if we could, one of the more interesting aspects of this current dilemma we find ourselves in with the silver market. You know, according to your work and others, the price of silver is currently unsustainable, due in part to the fact that it's under the cost of production. I'd like for you, if you would please, to tell people why this fact could be so significant.
Well, it's not well under the price of production. I mean, the price of production, of course, varies mine to mine. And in a, you know, polymetallic mine, like a base metal miner, like an RTZ or BHP, those type of huge conglomerates, they basically use silver as a credit for their base metal mining. So if you check their books, they're going to tell you they mine silver at a negative cost. Of course, that's just an accounting error or an accounting trick. But if you come to a primary silver miner, generally speaking, and we looked at many, many of them, you're around between like $21 to $23 per ounce. So right now at under $20, we're under the cost of production of most mines. So the market is very efficient over time of determining what takes place. So one thing that could take place is the price of silver rises. Another thing that could take place is mines go out of business. They can't make a profit and they close their doors. So the market will take care of this. I'm I am biased to the idea that that this will obviously curtail production rates, and you'll see the price rise. But that doesn't necessarily make it right. You could see just a curtailment in the market. But there's so many reasons to think why people would buy silver, not just for industrial purposes, but for protection and savings and that type of thing, that there's probably going to be a pretty good demand on the silver market continuing, especially both sides, really. Investment, because you can buy it near the cost of production, so someone that's of that mindset would probably take that attitude. And secondly, the industrial side. I mean, anyone that really knows how to run a company might want to warehouse some silver if they can get it under the cost of production. So there's reasons on both sides why you would want to basically get into the market at these levels.
Market forecasts are tricky because prices are so dynamic, but you have said in recent comments that you were looking for as high as 30 to 40 on silver and even 1700 on gold by year end. Do you feel that perhaps Wall Street insiders dumping their shares onto the public could be the impetus sending the metals higher as those funds flow into a safer haven?
I think so. There's a lot going on the stock side that needs to be addressed. One is that the juniors, for the most part, are just a train wreck, and many of them will fail still. The smarter companies, the mid-tiers, are looking for assets they can buy very cheap, so there'll be some mergers and acquisitions. The powers that be, or I should say more specifically, the more knowledgeable investors and mining concerns, meaning like CEOs and COOs and people that really understand the mining business, are taking positions on both sides. In other words, getting out of companies that are not viable and getting into companies that have assets. And they're making good strategic plans from this point forward to buy undervalued companies. And there's many of them that are, much safer, meaning like we do in the Morgan Report, where we have the mid-tier and the top-tier companies, whereas we do speculations, but we stress to use money you afford to lose and to take at least 5 out of the 10 picks that we have and use dollar cost, and use equal dollar amounts. So we just had one blow up on us. It was probably one of the best, story stocks you'll hear. It was one of the richest gold mines on the planet. And, with the adage is, Chris, in the business, the rocks don't change. The asset's there. But the management, and I don't want to blame the management per se. Certainly they had something to do with it. If you've got a very rich, high-grade resource, and it was just misplanned. I mean, I've been in this business a long time, and I've seen it happen before. That's why when people always ask me, what's your favorite junior, I give them a really quizzical look, like there is no such thing, because some of these best story situations can blow up, and this one did, and it's unfortunate. We had an investment in it, and several of our members did as well. And these things they're heartbreakers because, we do our best to find the best. I'm not a big believer in just a shotgun approach of just anything with gold in its name, buy it because it says gold. I mean, a lot of this stuff is just dirt. You really want the highest grade, best assets you can find. And when you find one of those and it doesn't work out, it takes a little bit off you.
I've also gone on record noting that silver could be a better long-term investment than even gold. I wonder if you could tell folks why, as silver approaches its more historic gold-to-silver ratio, as we start to see that reestablish itself, just how silver could be an interesting component for every gold investor to have in their portfolio?
Well, a couple reasons. One is there's a lot more poor people on the planet than there are rich people. But this is true, and I think most people that are objective would agree with me. And so what this means is the poor man's gold is much more affordable. So as gold starts to accelerate up, and it will. I don't know if it's going to be, this year or next year or whatever, but I really think it's within the next few years, and I think this year will be a good year for gold, but not a great year. Regardless, what will happen is at some point, and I don't know the number, it varies individual to individual, but when gold's at 2,000 or 2,500 or 3,000 or whatever, people will look and say, my, look at the gold price. Because it's so expensive, I think I'll buy silver. Silver is only, and pick a number, under 60 or under 70 or whatever. And a lot of people really don't look at like a P.E. ratio or what the value is. This is why the penny stock world is so attractive. People think that, oh, I could buy a million shares. It's only 0.01 cent per share. You know, like that is important. You know, cheap stocks are cheap for a reason. It's because they're not worth very much. I mean, that's the reason. This kind of attitude will spill over into silver, meaning that a lot of people say, I missed the boat on gold, or it's too cost too much for me to afford it, but silver doesn't. So when the mad rush hits, and I think this time it's going into the history books, I think this time when people wake up, you're going to see people rushing into these markets like never before. They're going to say, oh, gold's too much, or, you know, I've got $3,000 to invest, or I don't want to buy one gold coin, I'll buy silver with it. And since there's really a tighter market in the silver market than there is in the gold market, you could see silver's ratio come down substantially. I mean, people make light of the ratio, and you can do with it whatever you will. The fact is that the ratio tells you which one's performing the best. And when the bull market in silver started, the ratio was 80 to 1, and now it's 60 to 1. So what that means is it used to take 80 ounces of silver to buy an ounce of gold, now it only takes 60. And that says a fact. And the fact is silver's outperformed gold from the start of the bull market. Now, you could take a different starting point, which some of my, I won't say adversaries, but some of the silver bears like to, and say, well, if you started here and go to here, then silver hasn't done as well as gold. And that's well and good, and I understand that. But I'm trying to look at the big picture, and I'm trying to start an equal starting point. And that's when, you know, when did the silver bull market begin? September 2003, I called that. And from that point to now, you know, the 80 to 1 to 60 to 1. And it's been all over the map, by the way. Certainly it's been as high as 90 intraday, and it's been as low as 35 to 1. So certainly the ratio's moved quite a bit. I think the overall trend is what's important, which is that silver so far, and I think will continue, to outperform gold. So I think I hit the question.
I think it begs another question, just how quickly we watched the Bitcoin phenomenon take off. You know, we're talking around $4 or $5 per digital coin, running up well in excess of $1,000. It's an interesting parallel between the silver market, as you were talking about those 2003 lows in the neighborhood of, I want to say, $3.50 to $4 per ounce, just how quickly you could see something far more tangible take off like a rocket ship.
But one thing that people haven't really talked about, at least from the interviews I listen to, and I certainly don't hit them all, but I hit many because it's, you know, it's my work. I mean, I try to catch almost everything in the silver space, is what happens when this tipping point's reached, or people say, oh my goodness, my pension really is going to be worthless, or the banks are closing, or they are going to bail in my money, or whatever it is, whatever the event is. What do you think the coin dealers are going to do? You think if they really believe that the currency is going to be destroyed, that they're going to actually sell metal? And I know the end is nigh. I'm closing my shop.
You know, that's precisely what occurred in Zimbabwe recently, when the shop owners recognized, you know, the price of this bag of flour, the price of these eggs doubling every hour. I think I might just hold on to it. And then the farmers wised up and the distributors wised up, since we're losing money by selling right now.
Yeah, well, that's the whole point. So there could be, I don't know if there would be, but there could be a point where you either have it or you don't. And there could be a point where no amount of fiat's going to get it for you. In other words, you know, it's like, well, I'll pay you, you know, the current price of silver is 100 an ounce. I'll pay you 120. I'll give you a $20 premium. I don't want your money. I don't want it. I'd rather hold this. I'm more confident in holding this coin than I am holding any fiat for any amount of time. And as you just illustrated, it's happened before, and it could happen again. And this dollar situation, as I explained at the beginning of our interview, is a situation that you really know what the outcome is. What you don't know is exactly how and exactly when. But would you like to be in a situation where you had your $30 silver when it's at 20 right now, and then, for an example, 6 months from now, there's all the dealers close shop and say, no, we're not selling. We're keeping our inventory. I mean, I'm not saying this is going to happen, but certainly things like this can happen and have happened. And I would take that stance. If I was running a coin dealership and things got out of hand, I would just walk away. I'd say, you know, doors closed, just like these brokers do when the market goes south. They just don't pick up the phones. I mean, this could happen.
I find it alarmingly ironic. Detractors of gold and silver and the merits of owning precious metals have a tendency to take the flip side of that argument and use it against investors in gold and silver. For instance, they will argue folks could never return to gold and silver because there's just simply too much money out there to be covered by gold and silver. You recognize the algebra doesn't add up. It just means that eventually the true value, the true price tag has to go on each ounce of gold and silver.
Yeah, well said. I mean, I could, you know, a thought just popped in, so I'll voice it. You know me, I'm not bashful, but, you know, if you could take a magic wand and it's a truth meter. In other words, you wave the wand and all you get is the truth. The truth is that a piece of paper isn't money. That's the truth. A piece of paper is currency. And Mike Maloney, I think, is one of the best at explaining that in his video series. So if we took the magic wand and said, okay, everybody in the world gets to keep their money and they wave the magic wand, then all the paper would go away. And what would be left? And it would be gold and silver. Now, this is just a thought experiment. It's almost preposterous to say. But the point I'm making is backing up what you just said. And that is that you can print to kingdom come. I mean, I'm sitting here looking at a $100 trillion bill from Zimbabwe. They were printed but never issued. The thing had collapsed before they were able to actually get them into the people's hands. Nonetheless, this is what it had gone to. I mean, talk about absurdity. You know, wouldn't you like to take one of these $100 trillion bills over to Janet Yellen and say, here, I'm paying you off?
I wanted to move on here to a story affecting the supply of the metals around the world and the emergence of China as a burgeoning superpower. You may have recently heard that they now are taking over the sobriquet of number one gold consumer as well as number one gold producer. Kind of an interesting double moniker there, if you will. You've gone on record recently noting that as China absorbs this global supply, that it could be the opening salvo, first shot fired, igniting a short covering squeeze.
Because China has taken a stance very positively in the gold market, this and there is a huge power struggle at the top. I wrote about this in the Morgan Report several months ago. There is what I call the Anglo-American Empire, which is basically your London/New York consortium of global elitist bankers that have run the system for a very long time. But they and their arrogance doesn't guarantee that they're going to come out on top because you have a counterforce with the BRICS, primarily Russia and China, saying, no. You know, when we're not buying into your system. And this struggle is taking place as we speak, and I think it'll continue. And where it usually comes down to, and it has in history, is the old adage, he who owns the gold makes the rules. Now, if the golden Fort Knox, it doesn't exist, or maybe it does, but I doubt it, regardless of where it's sitting, it's ownership. Who has it? Well, China is being very deliberate on what they own because they're shipping it into their country and locking it up. This is where we're going. So we're going to see a point in time, I think, where you're not going to necessarily get the global currency that everybody's talked about for a long time or in some circles. You may actually come out with a new reserve currency. Maybe it's a yuan. Now, I'm not saying that's necessarily the case either. What I am saying is it's not a lead pipe cinch. It's not a fact of complete that we're going to see the Anglo-American Empire come out on top on this thing. It may not. In fact, if you ask me to vote, my vote, and you can read it in the Morgan Report, is no. I think you're going to see the power shift to the east. Usually the power, from an Austrian perspective, from the Austrian economist perspective, is per capita is the means of production. Whoever's producing the most is producing what? Wealth. What a concept. Who's producing the most wealth right now? China. Does China have problems? Yes. Why do they have problems? Well, many reasons, but one of the primary reasons China is so much trouble is because they caught the Keynesian disease. They bought into the Western banking system's way of doing business, using leverage. That's the problem. I mean, you know, the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds were very bright in going over there and saying, we're running out of pigeons for our Ponzi scheme. And the only way a Ponzi scheme works is to get more people at the bottom. Oh, wait a minute. There's 1.2 billion people in China that haven't caught on to this yet. That'll keep the game going for a while. Let's get them involved. Oh, yeah, and that's good for what? Another decade or so. And that's what's taking place. But the time is ending, as far as I'm concerned. And believe me, I've been studying this for a long time. Doesn't make me right, but it certainly is more than just a flippant opinion. It's a very studied, very carefully analyzed opinion. And my opinion, this thing is not going another 5 years. It's not.
You know, I'd like to shift the focus, if I could, to the silver market. You've studied the Hunt Brother fiasco. The powers that be capped the price around 50, and yet, once again, early 2011, right around 50 again. I'd like for you to discuss how that scared the powers that be and what it might imply this time around.
One of the best books is one called Silver Bulls by Paul Sarnoff. If you can find it, it's probably a very high-priced book on Amazon, I'm guessing, because there aren't many copies of it. That's probably the best play-by-play, day-by-day, hour-by-hour what happened. The Hunts had both futures and physical metal. Rumor has it that they, the Hunt brothers, were going to sell off some of their oil holdings to meet their margin calls in the silver market. And that's when things closed down. They stopped trading. You could only have sell orders, and they had a little meeting. It was one of my passions in life to be able to speak with Bunker and interview him either privately or publicly, if he would allow it. And I actually met the one of the trust managers for the Hunts, and I've known him actually for years now. And, of course, made that request, and it was denied. Did they corner the market? I mean, you can argue either way. I'll stay neutral on that. The point is that their main purchases were far under the, you know, $30, $40, $50 level. Once this thing caught fire, they'd already made their acquisitions. The second point is, you know, why did it stop out at, you know, $48, $50 again? I think that had something to do with it, Chris. I mean, this is a nominal number, but most people don't even think about inflation. I mean, there's people out there, as hard as it is for me to believe, that think that, you know, $50 in 2011 is about the same as $50 in 1980. And of course, that's preposterous, but they didn't stop to think. It's like, oh, silver stopped at 50. Yeah, it stops at 50 again. And the powers that be know that. So that nominal value, that nominal number, has a great deal of meaning. They, the CME, the Commodities Mercantile Exchange raised the limits on margins substantially, like four times, maybe even five, as silver was moving up rapidly. And that, of course, helps cool off the market. They do that in other markets. It's not just silver, but certainly they had to do a lot more in silver than other markets. You know, normally one margin change is enough, and two is usually plenty sufficient, but they had to go beyond that. So there's a lot behind the silver market. I mean, look, I've been looking at money for most of my life. I've been studying, you know, money, metals, and mining, which is, you know, the subset of the Morgan Report, as my passion for a very long time. I'm always learning more. I don't know all there is to know about the silver market. I find new, you know, interesting facts about silver, you know, maybe on a every other week kind of a basis. But there's so much happening that I know one thing. Nothing moves like silver moves. If you look at all the commodities, I mean, you can go back and look at the rapeseed, which is a very interesting name. It's now called canola oil. But the rapeseed market had a big move if you go back in history. I mean, I follow these markets fairly closely. And any commodity can accelerate and move, but nothing moves like silver, and there's a reason for that, and that is it's a tangible asset. Going back to the Bitcoin situation for a moment, the one thing about the gold and silver market in the physical realm, which is a very, 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 very tiny part of the market, because most of the market is a derivative of gold and silver, but not actual physical metal. But the physical reality of those two markets is so small, and it's one thing that stands above and beyond anything else that can come close, and that is that it's real and it stands outside the financial system. If there was a complete electronic failure, for an example, or a bank holiday, or a brokerage closure, or ATM problem in a certain part of the country or the world, gold and silver in your hand will work anywhere. Now, I'm not saying that everybody on the street's familiar with it enough to take it in barter or whatever, but it doesn't take long to show them what it is and convince them in many cases. And in other parts of the world, it is almost a daily occurrence. There's parts of the world that take, you know, gold much more seriously or much more as a normalcy than that is done in, say, North America. So, but the main point is back to this. These two assets stand outside the financial system and outside the monetary system as it exists, alone and above anything else. There's no other thing. Think about it. There's nothing else that does what these two can do. And yet, how many people are even aware of that, or even aware that, you know, why it's so important. Many people sort of have a sixth sense that something is wrong or even drastically wrong with the system. The old bongo care isn't working. You know, they're cutting back this and that. They keep printing money. Something's wrong. It doesn't feel right. I don't feel as wealthy. The dollar doesn't go as far as it used to. All these monikers about things not being that desirable and something wrong, but they can't really articulate it, nor come up with a solution, nor think through what would it be like if, and pick your scenario, ATM failure, CME event, bank holiday, brokerage holiday, the EBT cards stop working, a merchant closes his door. I mean, just there's all kinds of probabilities out there. They're commonly referred to as black swans, and there's a lot of them. One of them might just land here, and we just don't know when.
Returning to your nominal silver price concept, we talk about $50, let's say, back in the 1980s peak, and then, of course, fast forward to 2011, I guess that's 30-odd years. If we use the inflation adjuster, you're talking in the neighborhood of 2.5-fold higher than the 1980s peak. So the real price of silver then, $125 to $140 per ounce. Fair value and intrinsic value, very difficult topics when it comes to almost anything from stocks, bonds, let alone commodities. Do you care to give us your estimate for an intrinsic value for silver in 2014 terms, please?
That's a tough one. Well, what I'm going to say is probably going to upset a lot of people to follow my work, but I'll, and this is an objective, non-silver bug perspective. So Harry Brown, who's one of my mentors, and you can look him up. It's Brown with an E, B-R-O-W-N-E. He was the Libertarian presidential candidate twice. Going back years and years ago, he did a report in his newsletter, again, years and years ago, and talked about the intrinsic value of silver, and it was $10 at the time. And $10 silver, when silver was sub 5, was, you know, in real terms, a gain. But if you looked at it as if silver had nothing other than what could you mine it for, and it was purely a commodity like copper or aluminum or tin or nickel, if it was that only, then what would it be worth? And the answer to that question, in my opinion only, would be probably around the $40 level in today's dollars, which are subject to change almost minutely. However, that's not the reality in my view. The reality is, what is the price of gold? So I'm going to come back to silver, but the price of gold is, what is gold used for? And the answer is, it's used for money. I mean, it coats the space helmets of the astronauts, and yes, it's used as a heat shield in some of the space shuttle areas. I used to work in aerospace. And yes, gold is used on an industrial level at a very, very minuscule level. So gold's real purpose is money. And it has the classic part of money, which is a store of value. That a gold coin today is going to buy you something. It bought you something 100 years ago, 200 years ago, 500 years ago, 1,000 years ago. And it's going to buy you something 100 years from now, 200 years from now, 1,000 years from now. It's going to have value. And people have determined that over centuries. So now silver has actually fulfilled the same role as gold. In fact, it's been used more places and more often as money than gold has. But you get the gold-centric people that think only gold is money. And the fact is, silver is the monetary metal of history. And that's not me saying it. That's Milton Friedman. And he's a Nobel laureate in economics. I'm not. But history shows that. But people forget history, or they don't learn it, or they don't understand it, or they don't believe it, or they choose to ignore it. I don't care. The fact is, silver's been used as money. So because of that fact, silver has an intrinsic value that would be higher on a monetary basis than on an industrial-only basis. And because of that, it's something that's inherently known to certain groups. Not only the gold and silver bugs, maybe the 1% of us that exist in the North American region, but if you go into India, I mean, you're looking at probably half the population understands what gold and silver are all about. You go into some of the other Asian countries, it's a lot higher percentage as well. So it's something that's indeterminable as far as what is the real value, because it's whatever the market determines. What we do know from history is that in extremely lucrative times, an ounce of silver or a dollar's worth of silver, which is about three-quarters of an ounce, was a man's wage. But if you go back into the Roman Empire, a tenth of an ounce is a man's wage. So if you think in those terms and you think of, wow, what if I put 1,000 ounces of silver away? What would that represent in Roman times as far as days of work? It's substantial, very substantial. And there's not that much silver around. I mean, how many people would have to do that to basically take up the silver market? But these are type of arguments you never hear from Wall Street. You'll never hear in the mainstream press. You have to, you know, ferret out on shows like yours. And people will say, that sounds really good, but, you know, and Morgan sounds like, you know, fill in the blank, good, bad, indifferent. I don't really care. But I'm not going to buy it. You know, silver's at $40, and it's at 20 now. Why would I buy it now? Which proves my last point. People don't buy bottoms. We already called the bottom. The bottom is in, as far as I can tell. The bottom occurred 6 months ago. We've been building the base higher than the 1817 intraday level for over 6 months now, and I know it's coming up. Could it go below that level? Yeah, it could, but I really, really doubt it. Every day that goes by that we're above that level proves that the bottom is in.
Please tell folks more about the Morgan Report, what they'll find at silver-investor.com.
You bet. At the bottom of the page, you can see our Twitter feed and our YouTube channel. Those are both for free. We also have a weekly free e-alert letter if you want to get on that, and you can get off it if you wish. And then, of course, there's three levels of service, the basic, the intermediate, and advanced, and those are all explained on the right-hand side of the webpage on a pull-down menu.